Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like Steven, we sell scented sweatshirts. And the Shopify customer service team helped us so much. And I would say we had questions at 3, 4 a.m. They were there.
For sure. And I think it's why they help turn browsers into buyers.
Totally.
So if you want to manufacture true crime leggings in Guatemala and sell them in Indonesia, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase, today.
That's shopify.com/bookclub. shopify.com/bookclub.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Celebrity Book Club.
Cold Sun. Persimmons. Japanese knife.
Pizza fresh from the box. Moon winking at my husband.
Farm stand at dawn. Sheep butter. Viking oven.
Duck roasted. Apples sliced. Sun satiated. Christmas over.
Warming cheese. Crackling fire. Boots scraping on the porch. Pizza for dinner.
Alpaca blanket. Tom yum soup, leftovers for days. Masterpiece Theater.
Merino wool bon mi, son's girlfriend home from college. Honey dripping.
Damp sweater. Oh, fuck it.
Okay.
Okay. Whew.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Bellini. Celebrity Book Club. Come read it while it's hot. Celebrity Book Club. Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club.
Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hello, best friend.
It's so good seeing you down under the Brooklyn Bridge, where you can hear the train rattle and roll. New Yorkers, bagel men, construction workers,
tourists,
halal carts,
artisans, constructionists, designers, web programmers, girls,
salespeople.
And folk who have laptops,
yeah,
and live workspaces. It's great to be in New York. I love the city. I love working in media.
Do I love working in media? Sure. But is it my passion?
No. What's your real passion?
Food.
Yes,
food
I
is
agree.
My passion. And
speaking of, we just had a Thanksgiving
we,
holiday. We personally
we
just
had
celebrated
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
No, it's interesting you say that, because famously my family was like always really trying to switch Thanksgiving up and like having it on the 14th of November. So Thanksgiving
and not doing a turkey
and like now I've recently gone into like doing Thanksgiving on the day and doing a turkey and
celebrating
yes,
our national colonial fucking day
and making fucked up American food filled with butter. Oink, oink, to get us fatter so then we can shop tomorrow. Bye, bye, bye. Anyway, today's really exciting and I just want to get to it. We have an amazing guest in studio and we're going to get
Okay, so I guess we'll talk about the turkeys I made in the VIP lounge.
We're going to talk about the Alice and Roman turkeys you made in the VIP lounge. We're going to talk about the update of my full TikTok, the Popeyes turkey.
The infamous Cajun Popeyes turkey
in the VIP lounge.
Cannot wait to hear about this.
We're talking about a mom today.
We're talking about the book we read today is one of the most iconic books ever. It is
one of the most iconic people ever. I feel like when we started this podcast, it was like she was always on the list.
Yes.
She is someone who I think I literally did discover her on Twitter.
Yeah. She has an incredible Twitter presence. She's just like the ultimate poet when it comes to food. She was the New York Times restaurant critic for many years. Then
she was the gourmet.
Editor of gourmet from about 2000 until its death in 2009.
She is a memoirist. She worked at bakeries in San Francisco and Berkeley in the 70s.
She's a contemporary of Alice Waters. We all know her. We all love her. Of course,
we're talking about Ruth Reichel.
Is it Reichel or Reichel?
I thought it was Reichel. Maybe we can ask our amazing guests.
But not only are we doing this incredible food book, but we have an incredible foodist.
A coup. Really.
A coup, really, for us and for the entire industry. I don't think he's ever appeared on a podcast before.
No. He is a contributing editor to the magazine Bon Appetit.
Maybe you've heard of it.
He's, I mean, just so huge in the food space.
But also, like, huge to me as a friend, as a compatriot. We just had a delicious meal at Via Croda, which we will be talking about.
On the VIP line. Well, actually, no, we might get into it right at the top.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
Emil Stonick.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
We are so thrilled to have you here.
I just want everybody out there to know that I'm also a Patreon subscriber.
And that's how you got in here.
More than a year.
Yes.
Yep. And I got after a year, you get your token and then you get to come on the podcast.
Yes. So let that be a lesson to all of you. Stick around. Yep.
Good things are in store. You know, you work at one of the most famous food magazines. Oh, because, you know, you're an amazing chef. No, it's the token system.
Nope. They just emailed me and they found out I was a subscriber and they're like, what do you do? Is there a book that we could kind of, is there some way we could make this work?
Yes.
We sent you a Amtrak coupon.
Yeah.
And you came right into the city.
You used your rebate and you hopped the train from Hudson. We are so grateful for that.
So we just had a lunch together.
Yeah.
And having lunch in Manhattan, I think, it's so heavy and so present in the Ruth Reichel book.
So she is from the
Manhattan.
Era.
She's from the West Village.
But also, her era is kind of the golden age of magazines. I see this book as a sister book to the Tina Brown book that we read because they both helmed a magazine under Cy Newhouse's Condé Nast and, like, had an insane budget to do whatever they wanted,
but
basically.
It's kind of a Jekyll. I found it a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde.
I agree.
To the Tina Brown, where Tina, you know, was, you know, in so many deals, in so many cars, like, she knew the, like, restaurants weren't for eating. They were for meeting.
And whereas Ruth actually wanted to eat.
She actually wanted to eat, but also I feel like she was kind of on the Titanic as it was sinking.
Yeah.
You know?
No. Tina was, like, building the Titanic in the 80s, you know?
Yes.
Like, she was having fun. There was no, like, the internet wasn't a glint in anyone's eye. Like, there was nothing but clear skies ahead. It was just like, how can you make your magazine the biggest and the best and the brashest, honey?
The line of black cars outside the building was only going to get longer, never shorter.
Yeah. And then Ruth just, like, saw, you know, Rome fall.
But I feel like also because she came in, she was such a bumpkin. Like, that was, like, the thing. She comes in, she's, like, in her, like, Berkeley knit sweater.
She's always being, she defines also, like, in this way we talk about celebrities who are like, I'm so the weird girl. When she actually was the weird girl and everyone was, like, so fab and, like, with a driver. And she was like, I was just in this vintage Chloe black blazer going to the event, and I realized I was way overdressed in my chic little vintage look. Like, I'm so weird.
And then she was like, oh, I was in, like, the grossest little, like,
brocade, crocheted, floral, like sweater blazer. So art teacher with my frizzy hair. And like everyone's always like giving her the once over with her outfit. And they're like, I can't believe you wore that to the Algonquin.
I know. I feel like the first half of the book is her just being like, and I walked into the room with James Truman and he just looked me up and down and shook his head in displeasure.
She actually, they're all so she says it so many times where it's like, okay, clearly you've now pathologized this as like a virtue of yourself that like you're always poorly dressed in a room full of totally superficial Midtown.
But then the clothing allowance kicks in.
And then it does. Okay, but this is all just to say we did eat in Manhattan because we wanted to be Ruth.
Yes, just we wanted to be Ruth.
How did you come into Ruth? What's your relationship with her?
Well, because I will say, you actually recommended this book to me. We had been DMing, mm-hmm. and we...
Emil and I actually, we also DM. We also DM.
It's true. I may actually have DM'd with Lily about it. Fierce.
Okay, but you and I have been to more weddings together.
That's true. One more
wedding.
We've
only been to one wedding.
Well, you two crashed the first wedding.
We've been to.
I was not a guest. I was cooking the wedding. The reason I wanted to read it was because, I mean, Gourmet was my favorite magazine. And like for me
Growing up as a young youth in Maryland?
Not even. Like it was like in college, in the early aughts, or I guess mid-aughts,
mm-hmm.
all I wanted to do, Oberlin College, all I wanted
you
to do...
You and Lena, same class?
No, she was a year above me.
Okay.
But we overlapped.
Sure.
You know, we were friends once.
Absolutely.
And then...
As we all were.
Yeah. I remember hearing her on Terry Gross one time when she got famous, and then I texted her, and I was like, I can't believe you're on Terry Gross. She said, I'm sorry, who is this? And we haven't spoken since.
And now she texts you... Wait, I heard you
on CBC.
Sorry, lost this number. Who is this?
That'll be really satisfying.
Yeah, it's going to feel good.
And everyone else, they're reading the, Fight Club or whatever in college.
And you're reading Gourmet. You're pouring over Gourmet
in the dorm.
We're reading Jack Kerouac or whatever. Yeah.
I remember when I found out that Gourmet was folding and I mean, you could talk to my roommates at the time. I was living in like a big old falling down house, like Ruth,
Yeah,
in Berkeley, communal house,
yeah,
in Ohio, and was beside myself. I was just drunk all the time, walking around the house, ranting and raving about it. And I was like, "Where am I going to work now? Bon Appetit!"
Wow.
Because, to me, Bon Appetit was like 30-minute meals.
It was Rachel Ray.
Yeah. And Gourmet was for people who really cared about food, really cared about
cooking,
loved entertaining. Food. It was real writing.
Yeah.
The photography.
And
now here I am.
It was excellence. It did not cater to the lowest common denominator, as all media must do now.
Right.
No offense to current Bon Appetit, job with the content that they produce. But, back in the day, and this was sort of Cy's empire, which was like, as Ruth says, he had a commitment to excellence, and he was like, gave his editors free rein, and it was hire the best writer, travel around the world, take risks.
But so Ruth comes in, they bring her in because Gourmet is just, no one's buying it.
Yeah.
I think they're
and it's been around since the 40s or something.
Right, basically.
So old.
Yeah.
Yes.
They realize, it's being written for people with servants and no one has servants anymore. Okay,
right.
Honey, this is the 90s. They brought her on because they were like, we got to switch it up.
She absolutely anticipated all of the trends of just like food is going to become more democratized. It's going to become more international. Like more like middle class Americans are going to want to cook. They're going to like... chefs are going to become celebrities. It's like all of the trends that we have now, like she anticipated was like, we need to incorporate these into the culture.
May I read a quote that
please.
Gasped?
Yes.
She's working at this point, actually, for the Times. And she says, "And all the naive earnestness of a young writer, I cried, Thai food is going to be the next big thing. But our readers," her voice was cool and distant, have no interest in the next big thing. Other publications attempt to be timely. Here at Gourmet, we like to think of ourselves as timeless. That can't be true, I replied. I've learned everything I know about the food of other countries from the pages of your magazine. Gourmet has taken me to Mexico, China, India. Now you need to take your readers to Thailand. She literally...
So this was when she was pitching a story to go to Thailand.
When she was like 20.
Yeah. And what's insane is she's like, ultimately, I sold the story elsewhere and I didn't get to fly to Thailand. I'm like, imagine today going up to, I don't care, any magazine, like any, Bon Appetit. Imagine I go over to the Freedom Tower and I knock on whoever's door and I'm just like... Hey, I want to write a story about Thailand. Will you fly me to Bangkok?
No, they'd be like, oh, it's a story about Thailand? That sounds great. So you're already going, like, on vacation?
Right, exactly.
Like
you're funding your trip, and you can write a blog about it while
like,
you're there.
And you can, like, actually pay us to publish it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you want to do a story on a soup? We'll send you a car to the airport. Yes. We'll have a clothing allowance.
Yes.
But
it's just an incredible...
You'll need at least a month in Thailand.
Oh,
probably.
But basically, also at that time, like, Gourmet was like, oh, we did a story on Bangkok. And of course, it was about like some insane, like, royal meal. And she was talking about...
Yes, the street vendors.
Just the street vendors, which now, of course, is, you know...
Thailand is more than just Bangkok.
Across every single page is for, you know, like, Sandy Cobble Hill to make her boyfriend Tom Yum, which is now like happening every second of every
day. Well, I know.
Day.
I mean, now every restaurant in New York, it's very just like if you
street
don't know the
food.
Difference between Northern Thai and Southern Thai, like you might as well close up shop and move to Philadelphia.
I was going to say Hoboken, but yeah, Philadelphia.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ruth sort of starts out. So she talks a little bit about her childhood in this.
Which mother was, to quote my mother, mother was bipolar.
Yeah.
Father was a German immigrant.
Yeah.
And her mother was very like, always wanting her father to buy her furs and take her to the Ritz.
They would do this thing where they would go to the Rainbow Room and they would have one drink and then leave because they actually couldn't afford to have dinner, but she wanted to just be... In the
but they would also try
the
to
general
go,
vibe.
She really wanted to go to the Four Seasons. The mom really wanted to go to the Four Seasons, and they would go to that like kind of like depresso little cafeteria like nearby and eat like hot dogs and then like look in the window of the Four Seasons.
I mean, it
and she says this quote that so rings true. I feel like when I go to like a fancy cocktail place, that which she's like, no matter how slow you sip. A drink only lasts so long.
Oh, God. That was the most... That literally broke me. No, literally...
Heartbreaking.
No matter how slow you sip, it's still just
to
one drink.
To be like, I'm getting my fancy cocktail, and it's like, well, do you have money for the dinner after?
No, but it really just... It felt a little bit too close to home. I was just like... I mean, literally, my birthday, we went to the Grill, which is the old Four Seasons that she talks about constantly, and they wouldn't let me in because I was in shorts. And formal shorts from APC, and
that is amazing that a major food group restaurant
I know.
In 2022 is turning people away in shorts. Just because I feel like there are so many people with so much money in New York City and in LA and like other like big
food cities.
Who are
wearing sweatpants.
Yeah. Right, you like
Yeezys,
look at, you're like,
it's like...
Right, you're like, that is clearly the richest person in the room, the person in basketball shorts and flip-flops.
That's billionaire.
Yes, yes.
No, you know, like...
If you're dressed like Adam Sandler, you've got money, honey.
Yes.
We went to our fancy lunch, and I put on my, like, literally, like, 80s Tina Brown drag of, like, a blue and white striped shirt. And it's like, that's how you can tell I have $10 in my bank account.
I know.
Like, if I was, like, billionaire, it would be, like, tattered sneakers, T-shirt... And then, like, weird, like, Merrells or something like that.
And I just, it was heartbreaking that she could tell also at that age that her mom was so desperate to be a part of this world that she would never be able to be in. And she could also, because she also wasn't a part of it on an intellectual level. Like, the mom didn't work and she didn't have, like, the creative outlet. And she didn't have, like, she had some fabulous friends, but she wasn't, like, at the dinner parties every night.
Well, she was married once to like a wealthy guy, right?
Yeah.
And then they got a divorce, and then she married Ruth's dad, and then they had like a little bit more of it. Like,
who was the sort of the graphic designer of books?
Loved books.
He loved to stroke their spines.
Yes.
and Ruth is like such a daddy's girl. I mean, obviously because the mom was also very, I feel like, a little Grey Gardens and like wrapped in fur and just like in her room for a full month.
Yeah.
If like she wasn't at the Ritz.
The stuff around the mom was so crazy because you also like the book opens and before you ever hear anything about the mom being like bipolar or having like mental health stuff, she's just like, yeah, you know, I loved cooking and I would read Gourmet magazine. I thought it was really cool. And then I got the Gourmet cookbook, which was great because sometimes I would just open the fridge and there would be a suckling pig in there.
Oh, yeah,
and then my mom would be like, can you cook it? And then I did indeed cook it.
And then I cooked the suckling pig. And she was like, well, that magazine is actually worth its salt.
Right. And then like two chapters later, she's like, my mom was bipolar. And like, that explained the suckling pig and...
and why there randomly was a full pig
in
the fridge.
And why they reorganized the house so that there were no bedrooms.
Oh, that was insane. Yeah, because the mom was just like, this is better for entertaining.
Right. Yeah, right, right. We'll have to... And she was like, and I could... I would always fall asleep in the bathroom because my room is where they serve dessert.
You know, I empathize with the mother in this way because you're just like, you know, you want to put your best foot forward and like you have people over and you're so concerned because you're seeing people entertaining these grand monsters where they have the classic six. They have the maid's room. They have the servant's entrance to the kitchen. And you're just like, well, where am I going to put dessert? Because this was
a dessert room.
I think it was also it was before there was, you know, an idea of luxury that is very current of like the Bon Appetit idea of luxury, which is you can have like paper plates like on your couch.
You've got everybody crammed into your little studio.
And it's like, oh, we don't have wine glasses. We all just like grab like old like kimchi containers.
We have mismatched kimchi containers as wine glasses because we're so
but
funky.
Then it's like this journey that Ruth goes on. So you know, she's at the New York Times. She gets poached by Cy.
Yeah.
Tina's, you know, she's at the New York, you know, she's wheeling and dealing. She knows what she's doing. And like, also, Ruth is a little bit just like, you guys are ridiculous with like, and they're all like, when she's negotiating her deal with Gourmet, like so many people are always like afraid they're being like followed by the paparazzi.
Oh, yeah. They're at the Algonquin and like all the Condé people are being just like,
do they follow us?
So you
it's like, you leave first yeah. And then I'll follow because the press. And then they like, she like walks outside.
So
like,
without revealing too much in the main episode, as someone who works for Condé, do you find that there remains an air of suspicion, paranoia around
conspiracy
the press?
Conspiracy theory.
I was going to say no. I was going to say no. But I mean, if you think about the analog to like paparazzi in like our modern age, just being social media,
right?
I feel like there is a paranoia around it. It's just different, and it's just like, oh, actually, the entire world is watching everything.
I mean, we were on the subway platform earlier, and we were talking about some gossip, and you looked around. I saw you look around.
You looked around.
Yeah, exactly. That to me,
you're like, who could be here?
Yeah.
And I think, yes, who could be here? And then it's like, you know, a friend will come to me and be like, oh my God, I saw, you know, Carla at the, you know, Fort Greene Farmers Market.
What was she buying?
I'm sure she was buying fresh
ramps,
heirloom tomatoes.
Well, but I guess it's also like the idea of like what, you know, when at the time when, you know, our more modern era where it's like media makers, editors, like whatever are not like in the old Condé Nast times, it was like, you are like a person who's like floating, does not live in this world.
Yes.
You are floating above everything. And instead, now it's like, you are to be the best possible everyman.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like Carla at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, she actually goes. It's not like there's like some, she has like a task rabbit going to like.
No.
Or, oh, no.
Like,
because
whatever.
Her brand has to be spotted
the brand,
at the farmer's
the brand
market.
Is what you're selling. You're on 24/7. Like, that is... That is the
and
whole
like, I
ball
saw,
game.
I saw Carla's Instacart shopper. at the someone sees like the screen.
I mean, that would be a scandal.
Yeah, that would
talk
be
about a notes app apology. Another thing I feel like is so different between her and Tina, where it's like Tina is a teetotaler, if I'm saying that correctly. She doesn't drink.
Oh.
And
right.
In her whole book, she's always
she's
like, I didn't drink at the parties because I wanted to remember everything. And she has these like meticulous diaries. And like Ruth is always like, sorry, I'm eating and drinking. She was like, at this point, I was drunk. It was 2 p.m. Like, she's at the office. Like, Ruth is enjoying food and drink. And Cy is also like an insane control freak. He doesn't like garlic.
Can we talk about the Frank Gehry Condé Nast cafeteria
that was
designed,
yeah,
and how is this still true that no garlic is served in the Condé Nast cafeteria?
Well, you know, so when I started working at Condé, it was still at Four Times Square, which is like where
pre Freedom Tower.
Indeed, there was no garlic. That was a real thing. But Cy was still. I mean, we moved.
Cy was still alive then.
Cy was still alive. He died in like 2016, 2017, mm-hmm. And you still saw him all the time, but it was really bleak. like
being so old, like
being being wheelchaired in,
okay,
head to the side.
Okay.
Oh,
like he be, you know, the wheelchair is being lifted up the stairs by like four sturdy men. His wife Victoria is, yes. No, at that point it was kind of like cardigan.
Okay. Grandpa.
Yes, and Victoria is following with the pugs. The only dogs allowed in the World Trade Center, it was like, I'm sure, written into the like whatever contract Condé had when they
wow.
moved into there. But in the old, in Four Times Square, in the like original building, yeah, no garlic. The food in the cafeteria was, her description of the food in the cafeteria was pretty accurate. Like, you could get a good sandwich made by a couple of true sandwich artists, and outside of that, it was like pretty bleak.
She describes it as
true sandwich artists.
Absolutely disgusting. Yeah, she's like the noodles were limp and overcooked and smothered in sauce. The only thing that was good was the sandwich artists who would put extra meat for the interns because they know they're getting paid.
Right, and she brings Doc Willoughby
yeah.
in for like an interview from Cooks Illustrated to like be her executive editor or deputy editor or something like that. And she like he really wants to see the cafeteria, and he brings her in. She brings him in, and he's looking around, and he's like, can we go somewhere else? And she's like, and then I knew I wanted to hire him.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It was like a test.
That really,
so
that
many
cafeteria
food
scene,
tests.
I just did a Devil Wears Prada rewatch, and I was like, when Anne Hathaway gets her like creamy chowder or whatever, and then Stanley Tucci is like, are you kidding? Like,
yeah.
What is, you're buying cream right now?
Celebrity Book Club.
This episode is sponsored by ZocDoc.
You're trying to find a cause for your symptoms.
Achy back, headache, runny nose, itchy eye, wart on my genitals.
So let me guess, you stumble down a TikTok rabbit hole full of questionable advice from so-called experts.
Suddenly I have cancer? No thank you.
There are better ways to get the answers you want and the care you deserve from trusted professionals and not random people on the internet. Though randoms, I love you, and my TikTok addiction, yeah, it stands.
But I'm sorry, Lily, you shouldn't be getting medical advice from some girl in her grandmother's basement in Toronto.
ZocDoc helps you find expert doctors and medical professionals that specialize in the care you need and deliver the type of experience you want.
That's right. Ditch the talk, get the doc. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun.
No more doctor roulette or scouring the internet for questionable reviews. With ZocDoc, you have a trusted guide to connect you to your favorite doctor you haven't met yet.
I love a trusted guide, like the time I climbed to Machu Picchu on the Inca Trail with a team of Sherpas. Millions of people use ZocDoc's free app to find and book a doctor in their neighborhood who is patient-reviewed and fits their needs and schedule just right. So find your Sherpa at ZocDoc.com. Go to ZocDoc.com/bookclub and download the ZocDoc app for free.
Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Slay. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZOCDOC.com/bookclub. ZocDoc.com/bookclub.
Ditch the talk. I want to talk about when she first starts working at Gourmet. So she gets poached, and she, you know, she has this incredible critic's eye, and Gourmet is kind of a mess. It's obviously, there's a huge budget. There's this test kitchen. They're doing all this food all the time, but things are not running smoothly. There's a lot of acrimony. And this is kind of the first time that she proves herself to the staff by being like a food genius.
Yes.
And this scene really took my breath away. So she walks into the test kitchen, and they're making a cake. And there's like 12 chefs around, and they're making this chocolate cake, like potentially for a next recipe for the next issue. And now they ask her what she thinks. I could feel their eyes upon me as I studied the jewel-like little cake, considering my options. I could begin by commenting on the praline topping. Was it too sweet, too bitter? Maybe the pieces should be smaller. The chocolate was another obvious target. I could suggest using one of higher quality. Should I speak up for the mascarpone?
Her language is so beautiful. Should I speak up for the mascarpone?
Then the fork met my mouth, and my body was flooded with sensations as the dark, dense, near bitterness of the cake collided with the crackling sweetness of the praline. The flavors tumbled about, a sensory circus that was finally tamed by the rich smoothness of the frosting. It was all I could do to keep from reaching for a second bite, extremely hard to hide my smile. I knew this cake. The cook's eyes bored into me. I'm guessing, I tried to sound tentative, that this cake has an English pedigree. And then the girl goes, how did you know? And then she goes, unlike Americans, the English don't overdo the sugar in their chocolate cakes. And then she goes, that praline's a nice touch, lovely texture. And I wouldn't mess with the mascarpone. Cream cheese reads so carrot cake, don't you think?
Oh. I'm searing. So I used to...
It's the perfect thing to say if you're like, you're your first day on the job. Just be like, I'm complimenting everyone, but I mean a little bit bitchy.
And yeah, because she also comes in this first, it's not even her first day, the 3 months before she starts. And like, they're all being so Devil Wears Prada and like eye rolling at her.
Yeah.
And she promises to them, because she like needs to prove herself also, that like she'll come in every day after she leaves the New York Times office.
Yeah, like while she's still working at the Times,
yeah,
she'll be like, I'm
in her in between.
She gets brought in like the day that Sai is like, okay, oh, the old editor's out and this gal's in. And then she's like standing in front of everybody and she'd like written that speech and she couldn't think of anything.
She's like shaking.
I'll come in.
And she's got like 60 people staring at her and she's just like, I'm going to come in every day for the next 3 months until I start.
And then I'll, yeah, say this one thing about mascarpone. So I used to clean the Sever Test Kitchen is my food magazine experience.
So Sever is no longer in print.
No.
But I think the website still exists.
Their turnover was wild, I could tell, as the maid. Like, it was always just a fully new staff, like, every week I went in there. But now I do recognize that one of the Test Kitchen people has, like, a Munchies YouTube show.
Okay. So yeah. Sever was a jumping off point.
It was very, like, ground. They were always redoing the office, and I would, like, grab a Sever on my way out, and, like... I feel like it.
Did you see the magazine get thinner and thinner? Pages running away.
And I feel like they were trying to actually take over what Gourmet used to be pre-Ruth, where it would be like 7-page story about going to like...
About like a crème glacée. Like.
Yes.
Yeah, but at a certain point, all of the Sever stuff just... I mean, it was like the Sever... I feel like the way that people would talk about Sever at Bon Appetit when I started was like, that's what we want. We want to be Sever, 90s Sever.
It was like
Gourmet was too close, and it was like, we want to be 90s Sever.
We want to be retro fabulous.
Well, yes, and we want these kind of like lush stories where you have like a ton of texture, and you're really like...
Journalism.
Yes, and you're like exploring cuisines, and like, you know, by the end, I feel like Sever was kind of like, you know, there are a lot of things that I liked about Sever, but I feel like it ultimately was like, every story was kind of the same, and it was like, I haven't been to where I grew up,
right,
blank place in blank country in 10 years.
And I went
this
back
was my
and...
first trip back, right. And I to make blank dish with blank member of my family, and then they're kind of shooting at themselves, and it's like a little awkward.
Well, I was always trying to like be so wise, like in the movie, like they'd be making something in the test kitchen.
And I'm so like, Good Will Hunting,
and I'd be like Swiffering, and like, and them just being so like, hey. You over there with the Swiffer. Do you want to try this? And me, to, and like, I wanted to be like, oh, me? Yeah, sure. And then all of a sudden, like, I say something, like, whatever. Cream cheese. I'm like, oh, good touch with the slivered pistachio. Almonds would be too Jordanian. Or something like that.
Is that rose water I taste?
And they're like,
have you
what?
Tried orange rind?
And they're like, what if you came in tomorrow? It's just a part-time job. Oh, yeah, do you want a spot here?
No, you're just like cleaning after hours, and there's like one of the test kitchen editors is like crying. They can't figure out how to make the cake better, and you're like, let me try.
Yeah.
What do you know? You're just a maid.
And you're just like, My mother worked many, many hours cooking soup for the governor of New York. I learned all her tricks of the trade.
She used anise, actually, in her cheesecake.
She raised those kids like they were her own.
But the thing about that cake, though, and that anecdote was, like, after she had, like, you know, done her performance in the test kitchen, the food editor was like, how did you know that? That's actually incredibly random. Like, don't give me this, like, English pedigree shit. And she's like, I actually literally had that cake last month and asked for the recipe and bake it all the time. So it was just like, and I'm like, it was the kind of thing where I'm like, in this book, I'm like, is that a true story? Because that sounds crazy.
Well, what I loved about it was like, she was like, we had been at this restaurant in London. So it's like, she is still being like globally fabulous. It's like,
I mean, it does make sense. She's trying restaurants and every night of the week.
Well, and also if you're like thinking about like before food was a thing.
Yes.
It was like when people are talking about like a very specific caliber of restaurants.
Yes.
That like there's only a certain caliber, quote unquote, caliber of restaurant that is going to be in gourmet.
Yes.
That she's going to go to if she's in London. It's like actually like far fewer.
Well, but and I don't think that it makes her a fraud that she remembered that she could taste remember that recipe from London. I think it just it makes her like more believably of that world and makes her observant. And like, that's what an editor needs to be.
I was just wondering if that story was true because it seemed like it just seemed so crazy. But you know, I believe it.
Because I feel like one thing that's weird about memoirs is like sometimes there's all these specifics and you're like, you can't possibly remember that. I don't remember what I said last week. How do you remember what you said 15 years ago? But this book is like, there's kind of big swaths of time she kind of skips over. So that's why I kind of do believe the stories a little bit, because it's not being so. And then the next day, and then the next day. Like, it seems like it is only just what she remembers.
I agree. The dramatic parts of this book that I'm obsessed with, and which why I am obsessed with Ruth Wegel, because she is so dramatic about food, is the story when, so her son hates Nick. He hates that she's the critic because, you know, she goes out to eat every week. Mm. She comes back from a night out and he's asleep and he's like, Mommy, I'm hungry. And she's like, oh, she was like, did your babysitter feed you? And he's like, yes, but it's not as good as your cooking. And then she's like, if this reminds me of the scene in Something's Gotta Give when Diane Keaton makes blueberry pancakes for Jack Nicholson. And she goes, do you want me to make spicy Chinese noodles? They'll be done in a flash. And she's like, Nick patted his feet. And she's just like, ginger glistening, garlic in the pan. And it's like this, it's so Manhattan, like this 10-year-old, like craving her like gorgeous.
And she's
like,
firing up the wok.
Her momofuku, like ginger scallion noodles.
That was so crazy too, because I got confused because that anecdote came kind of like early in the book. And then like later on, she reveals that her kid like didn't eat anything that wasn't white.
I was confused by that too, because he had this crazy like sickness for 12 years and never ate anything.
Yeah, like,
but
as
then
a baby, they were like
craving noodles.
He was like, they were like, he has like some kind of autoimmune disease, and so we have to keep him on this cocktail of antibiotics, or he might die.
And then she's it was like making him like chili garlic.
No, because like, then it's like, then they have that story about him like going to the Japanese restaurant and like he literally just eats rice.
The omakase chef who slowly introduces him to like increasingly rare fish.
One thing at a time.
Terracuda.
And then they're
shark.
Like, let's take him off the antibiotics. Yeah. I think it's time. And I was like, is this like a Munchausen by proxy? Like,
I mean, isn't it always?
They're like, he was so little and sickly and he would never eat anything except white foods because we kept on giving him the drugs because he needed the drugs, otherwise he would die. But he was kind of dying because he was really malnourished. And then we took him off the drugs and now he likes eating everything and he's 6 feet tall.
That was the lesson I got from it. It was just very like, he's on the pills because he needs to be on the pills because he can't eat anything, but because he's sick, but he's sick because he can't eat vegetables because he's on the pill. It was just like, there's a circular logic here. Why don't you just stop the...
Totally, yeah. I'm like, not here to question Ruth's parenting, but that did seem like a little bit sus.
Emil, how often did you go to eat as a child? Did you have a passion for restaurants as a child?
Oh, I loved restaurants as a child.
Okay.
Well, because my parents are very, like, my mom's a nurse and a nutritionist. My dad's a dentist, but he grew up in the Soviet Union, so he's, like, has a
Both with an oral fixation.
Uh-huh. Yes, 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 yes.
Indeed.
But my mom's a little more Midwestern and is, like, also, like, a nutritionist, too. And is, like, it was, like, very, like, no fat sour cream, like
no fat
salt vibes. And so like going out to eat was like oh, we get to have, like, hit me with the Alfredo.
Because the house was always, like, low cholesterol Sarah Betty, like, cookies or whatever.
Yeah, the snack wells. Yeah. Remember snack wells? Yeah, they were, like, no fat. Yeah, like, have as many snack wells
that's what
as
I'm
you want.
Imagining. That's fine.
I remember my babysitter eating an entire package of snack wells and me, like, being shocked. And she was like, oh, they're no fat. It doesn't matter.
She's downing sleeve after
sleeve.
Sleeve
of the snack wells. And it was like, that was the 90s myth. Just like, well, they have no fat in them, so I actually can eat, actually, like, 90 sleeves of Snackwell cookies.
Yeah, that was a time.
And I remember thinking, like, that just doesn't add up to me, totally.
So you were going to Chinese, Japanese, Indian, where you were, like, sampling the world?
Crab.
Yeah, you know, I feel like as kids, like, we went out to eat. I feel like we went out to eat, like, once a week. And that was, like, the thing. It was like we would go out on Wednesdays, hump day.
Oh,
And
you're a hump day guy.
Yeah, you know, it's like we would, you know, I ate sushi when I was really young. They were like these things. I was like definitely praised for being an adventurous eater.
They were like, oh, our son, he's so adventurous.
Right. Like, you won't believe, you know, I feel like when my parents met my wife for the first time, they're like, you know, he was always such an adventurous eater. When he came back from kindergarten with his little worksheet and said, favorite food, sushi. Second favorite food, pizza. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm stunned.
Yeah.
A kindergartner liking sushi?
You know, a little California roll.
I mean, because when I would go to the Japanese restaurant Shogun in Newton, Massachusetts, I would always have the chicken katsu as a child because that was kind of the kids' one.
There's no way I would have been allowed to order the chicken katsu
because
it's a fried chicken.
Oh, that was against your 90s health.
Like fried
credo.
Food. Yeah. No fried.
I mean, I wish I had been more adventurous, and I'm embarrassed to say that I was having the chicken katsu at that age.
No, I mean, I was getting, you know, I was referred to sushi, and I was getting the tempura.
Okay. Oh, because it was a little bit closer to what you appreciated. It was like more like frito misto. Which...
Well, I'm just saying of this one, there was a sushi restaurant, Japanese sushi restaurant called Kaya in Cambridge and Pearl Square. Shout out. And they had, I was like, okay, I'll get this like fried shrimp instead of like sushi because I'm afraid of sushi.
Yeah, but I think also you guys are from the Boston area, a little more urbane than the suburb of Baltimore that I grew up in. And I feel like going to sushi.
I don't know if it's that more.
Oh, yeah, you know,
they're both provincial backwaters, darling, where culture goes to die.
Steven, are you literally trying to like lose our base of massholes by... Maybe where you grew up in Newton was a provincial backwater, but where I grew up in Cambridge, full of
the crossroads
sushi,
of the intellectual
Thailand,
world. Yes.
Lebanese food, okay?
All the greats
I'm
came from
Cambridge.
I'm
going to wash your mouth out.
From Mario Batali to Helen Keller.
Speaking of Mario, should we get to the dinner at Balud where she spies Mario, Eric Ripper, and Daniel Balud all talking to each other?
Isn't that at EMP? Not
you're right.
To fact
no,
check.
No,
I believe
you
it's
are
at EMP.
Right. It is at EMP.
Was it because there were there were like two big chef's night out dinners? There was one at Balud Sud. I think that was the first one, and then there
I
was
believe
like,
it was Bar Balud.
Was no, I think Bar Balud was the last because they had like
that's the final one. That was like the end of the era. The recession's happening. We're having foie gras for the last time before we all go to jail.
Yeah,
like David Chang and everyone's just like crammed into Bar Balud and just like sucking parm down and everyone's getting truffles rained on their pussy and it's until 3 a.m. and she's like, we all knew everything's going under.
I feel like she knew like Mario was so nasty in this way because she was like
there is that. Yeah,
she
wait,
basically
that.
Just tells a story about how like, you know, someone explains to her that like Mario and Eric Ripper are like chain, like, you know, they're trading sous chefs and they're like, that's what they do. They send each other, you know, sending someone from Babo to, you know,
to Bernadette. And no one is like, you know, possessive over their young gun.
It was like the publisher who was like, wow, the food world is so different from the world. Like,
oh, yeah.
Any
he was
other
like,
world.
Donna Karen and Ralph Lauren would never be in the same room, which I also don't believe. But then somehow. How she just like segues and she's like, and this was before the Me Too movement.
No, it's the most like 2019 edit of just being like, and you know, back then I wish we had spoken up in our own ways more, but it was a different time. Anyway.
We knew that these men were sometimes a little handsy, but we didn't think it was that bad.
And we all were thankful that we got the opportunity to work with them.
The other moment...
Although I feel like she also wasn't working in kitchens as much, so it was like...
Well,
she worked in kitchens early on in, like, the Alice Waters Berkeley in San Francisco, which was probably a lot less, like, so many handsy Batalis.
Yeah, she was working in a very, it sounds like a very rarefied, like, she was like, yeah. I was just bringing in herbs from my garden to, like, garnish salads with because our the communal soup kitchen restaurant that we ran was running out of money.
Yeah. And it's like, she probably wasn't exposed to that as much.
No, to, like, the yelling, the toxicity of restaurants.
Yes.
The other moment, of course, I feel like every single book we read has to talk about 9/11.
Oh my God.
Sorry. The 9/11 chili.
The 9/11 chili.
The 9/11 chili.
I have a huge note about this on my phone.
I was reading, and I have the leftover turkey in my fridge, and I was like, I need to make her 9/11.
Did you make it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't have the beans. But I did make actually a very Ruth meal with my leftover turkey. Is I did like a Vietnamese rice noodle turkey. Yum. Dish last night with fresh herbs, carrots, Popeye's turkey, and traditional
Vietnamese.
And did you
give it to any local firefighters?
Yeah, so I actually just started, I just got in my car and I drove to Staten Island and I just started knocking on doors.
Followed the sounds of sirens.
She was like, so I love how they escape to Hudson where you live or whatever. And they were just, they go to there. We went to our upstate cottage, of course.
Because... No, she's like, we wondered if the bridges would be open and thank God we could get to our upstate house in Beacon.
Basically, the trauma of 9/11 for her is there's 4 hours of traffic getting out of Manhattan.
Yes. It's bad traffic. Then she gets to like Spencertown or whatever. And then she's like, I need to go back and cook.
Yes.
And then, like, goes back to the world, to the Four Times Square and, like, rallies everybody.
It was such a, like, ready-made Netflix documentary moment. You could just see it just like, so I did what we do. We cooked.
Yes.
We cooked. Well, the kitchens were closed. I get there. Everyone was there.
And then she's like, but then, you know, it's like this whole, you know, she's like, and then we got in my van. And I'm like,
Your van?
Like, what? You're the editor-in-chief of Gourmet magazine. You're, like, at a Condé publication in the aughts. And you go upstate all the time, and you have one kid, and you're driving a van?
Well, that's the theme of the entire book, is, like, she takes the subway, and everyone at the magazine is like, you took the subway?
She describes going on the subway, like, maybe 10 times.
No, it was, I was like, is this a Lou Reed song? I was like, you must calm down. She's just like, jingle, jangle, saxophonist, rattle, rattle. And it's like, you actually need to calm down. She's like, it's the most magical thing in the entire world.
You're next to pushers and
to
junkies.
Dealers.
I was like, Patty, businessmen and artists.
Smith. And she's like, oh, a car? You're sitting there. Not meeting anyone, hearing anyone.
And everyone's so freaked out that she's on her car. But then she's always like, but I did love taking the cars. And like, appreciated the excess.
But she did drive the van. Like, she like drives her van with all of the food down to like, she's like, we were stopped at Canal Street. And then we schlepped all of her clothes. And she still hasn't said like what they're making. And then she's like, and we opened it up and we had chili. And then it was like, the recipe, because there are recipes in this book, and then it was like your turkey chili. You're like, this is what you're in. You're in like a kitchen that has like all of these ingredients, and you're like, I'm going to make turkey chili.
You know, Emil, okay, when you're making food for a lot of people, it's a good bulk food.
I'm familiar with chili.
You could do, I'm just saying.
Like, is she going to do mini truffle grilled cheeses?
No, I'm a little more like, for the Staten Island firefighters. Let's give him some beef.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry.
Maybe
also,
not turkey.
This, again, is so, like, early 2000s movie. In the minute, I cranked up the music, and as the kitchen filled with the scent of chili and chocolate, we began to dance.
Yeah.
Defiant in the face of the disaster. And it's, like, the movie, it's, like, smoke, and she's, like, turning up just, like, Fleetwood Mac, and they're stirring, like, beautiful, like, Mexican cocoa leaves.
Like, reaching out long spoons to give each other taste.
Yeah, it's, like, it's incredible. No, more Meyer lemon. And then it's, like, the silent firefighter is just being, like, thanks. Tastes like home. It does sound like every single like do-gooder chef in the city was like, I can make food. It sounds like Grunzer was absolutely flooded with like gourmet comfort food, and they were like, we actually don't need any more food.
Rocco Despirito is pushing Ruth out of the way, just being so like, I actually made a lasagna. Yeah. And then Mario Batali is like, I made puttanesca.
And they're like, we're actually good. What we need is just like maybe more ladders or something.
Well, it feels also like very like COVID, you know, like our like version of the thing where it's like everybody like
we're banging, we're buying gift cards to Clumcorm,
and
they're
like,
we don't need them.
Like,
yeah,
look at all of the sandwiches that we made.
Yeah,
and we're giving to the doctor.
Yes,
and it's like I
nurses are like, we're good.
I'm good on the sourdough. Like
it kind of reminded me of Occupy Wall Street, a protest that I was super involved in.
Oh yeah,
and I remember going down there when
to feed
basically to get food. Because everyone also had the same idea, and there was literally like all of Zuccotti Park from like start to finish was like a full wedding buffet line of just like food from so many different restaurants, and you were like, this is maybe more than anyone needs. Just like there's plenty enough for like every protester and their entire family to have thirds, right. And there's still more just like lemon oregano parsley cold pasta from like whatever
chicken piccata
from this like Brooklyn restaurant that like wants to prove it's like progressive bona fides.
Oh damn, now FOMO. I feel like I missed out on that.
Okay, wait. There's so much we need to talk about.
I know this book is insane.
Oh, wait, the dress.
Oh,
Severine.
Oh, and I asked, and I was like, I started to Google Frank's.
I literally, it was chilling.
This dress you must have. You must have this dress.
So basically, she goes to the store in Paris when they're on this insane all-expenses-paid trip to do a full Paris
issue. The entire staff goes to Paris. They rent a house with a kitchen for all of the test kitchen editors to, like, test French recipes.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the staff is staying in different hotels every single night.
We traveling true Condé Nast style, staying at the city's finest hotels, testing the beds, the bathrooms, the service. Sertel forces us to all be guests from hell, dreaming up wicked tasks for the concierges. How quickly can they get a blouse cleaned, arrange a car, send flowers to an ailing friend?
This is what I want our jobs to be. I want to be like sent doing wicked tasks.
It's insane. And then they're renting eight apartments with like massive kitchens
separately,
just, like,
and then the whole time
and then going to restaurants,
and she's like, I landed, I never have champagne when I first land, but of course I was forced to. And then this guy brings out the flat champagne that you have, it's like a 1971 champagne that you have to have with this caviar, and he's like, hold it in your mouth, wait for it, and it's like the bubbles hit at minute two.
Wait, are you talking about Severine's husband?
Like, yes. That she meets at
the ghost.
So she goes to this vintage store and she's trying on this dress, and it's like 100,000 francs.
And it's a 1959 Yves Saint Laurent.
Right, Yves Saint Laurent was designing for Dior.
Yes.
But the lady like puts it on her and like takes a long time like lacing
and
it
up. And it's like,
really complicated.
She's like, you must have this dress. It's so you.
And she sees this label on the inside of the dress that says Severine. And she's like, what's Severine? She's like, maybe it was the woman who owned it before you, but now it must be yours. And she does not buy the dress. She goes to the Russian...
But she gets a card.
She gets a card. A business card from the woman to maybe sell her the dress. She goes to the Russian caviar later. She's dining alone. Then this ghostly man starts talking to her next to her.
Who's like eating a huge thing of caviar and drinking like a 40-year-old bottle of champagne by himself.
A bottle of champagne that was like fished out from the wreckage of the Titanic.
Yes.
And... then they start talking, and he's like, you remind me of my wife.
Wait, what was the thing that he said? It was so good.
You eat like her. Like, you have, like, a lust for life, and you're, like, willing to, like, you eat, like, when you're alone. Like, you, like, want to crave the world, and you're ravenous. And she goes, oh, what was your wife's name? And he goes, Severine.
I was like, sorry, I believe her.
He said, my wife ate caviar as you do, slowly, avidly.
Yep.
You put me in mind of her.
Oh, and then it's like, there was the whole thing also where the woman tried to talk to him, where she was like, I got 2,000 francs taken off the dress for you. Yep. It is now only
75,000
francs.
And so then he tells her that his ex-wife is Severine, or dead wife, sorry.
Please do it.
She goes, she reaches into her purse. Rips up the business card.
The dress that rips it up.
And she goes, the dress had already given me everything I would ever need. Chills.
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 Actual chills right here. You can see it.
I'm going to rip up a business card tonight.
But the thing that was so crazy was then they go back. That was like the full circle thing where it's like the last issue of, or like one of the last issues of gourmet that she's doing. They're like, there's no money. We don't have any money. There are no advertisers anymore. And she's like, we'll do a Paris issue again, but it's just me and the travel guy.
Yeah.
And we're going to stay in horrible hotels. And they like go to one nice restaurant. And she's sitting across the, from the guy.
From the guy. The ghost guy is there again. He's like, do you remember me? And she's like, of course I remember you. Putain, oh. Okay, that but that also trip is so beautiful. I mean, that's a lovely narrative device in the book, how she has this, like, pauper's trip to Paris.
Yes.
After the wicked trip
to
Paris.
The pauper's trip to Paris that echoes her trip to Paris when she was a kid, when she was, like, 20, and she was like, and I was just eating crumbs from the boulangerie,
and she has this realization. She goes, I realize that money becomes a barrier, insulating you from ordinary life. Because she has all these wonderful experiences where people are, like, showering her with, like, fun food and bringing her into, like, restaurants and bars. And when you're, like, acting rich, no one wants to give you anything.
No.
They're just like, oh, she's good. She's prissy and stuck up. We're not going to deal with
her. And then when you have no money, just that baguette and cheese.
Doors open. People want to break bread with you.
$3 bottle of wine.
Yes, absolument, mec. Putain. It was like, people were just like, you must dine with us. And they all had this, like... They wanted to, like, show off their country to her and be like, okay, I'm going to give you the best thing because I can tell that you're penny pinching.
Yeah. Well, that was also, I feel like that felt really, like, it was interesting thinking about that experience she had in Paris in restaurants where she's, you know, they're kind of, like, cosplaying as paupers and getting, like, fed for free by all of these people who are taking sympathy on her. When I feel like it's very, like, now it's, like, who does the restaurant send the fancy stuff to? It's like...
They send it to Alison Roman.
They send it to the people who can afford it already.
Yeah.
Whereas...
They said the people they want to impress.
When my wife was working at Chez Panisse, she said that that was, like, often a thing where they would be like, no, you don't send free stuff to the, like, fancy food writer. Mm. You send it to the couple who's clearly...
Yes.
They're 21 and they've saved up all year to go on this date, and those are the people that you send the champagne to.
That is the Danny Meyer vision of hospitality that I will say is still alive and well, as I've discussed in this pod. If you, depending on the restaurant you go to, at Yun Square, like, I had that wonderful experience on my birthday where they overheard me saying to Lily, aha, it's my birthday, and they brought me a free glass of wine.
Yes.
Just because they happened to hear that. Like, that is what is special. I was dining alone. I'm obviously not some
sad
VIP. My last thing I just want to say before we move to segments, the very end when Gourmet closes, she's at JFK, like, flying, and she goes to get, like, some wrap at, like, a whatever, some restaurant, and, like, the cashier is like, have it for free. I loved Gourmet.
I'm really gonna miss it.
And I feel like it was very you, like, crying over the magazine.
Yes. Like, yeah, I'll give you a free Pret sandwich.
And I'm just like, the way the, like, cashier at Pret is not reading or caring about Gourmet.
Well, you know what? You don't know. I bet right now there's a cashier at Pret, pouring over, you know, Eater, and they're giving someone a free sandwich.
You know, I did have, there was a cashier at the Pret near One World Trade Center who would give me free coffee all the time, and I had to stop going because it was a little...
Because you were a Bone App editor? Or because...
Yeah.
Oh,
it was, they were, it was like a flirty, they were, it was like, sometimes my coffee would be free, and then it would be like, oh, here's, like, two cookies for free. And then it would be like, your sandwich is free. And then I was like, I can't go anymore.
Was it a man?
Homosexual?
It felt like there was, yes.
Yes.
The answer is yes.
So you're homophobic. And
I am your first homophobic guest. That's not true.
No, absolutely
not.
No, you're not our first homophobic.
We've had plenty of homophobic guests before.
Celebrity Book Club.
This week on the VIP Lounge, Emile Stonick is coming back in the Whisper Room with us to talk food, restaurants, Thanksgiving, and proposals.
Oh,
you proposed to Chelsea Market.
I know. That's what her boss said the next day.
Sorry. After our whole conversation on the way here, we were like, yeah, you know what's so corny? Like,
food halls.
I know.
I'm actually going to propose.
In defense of Marisa.
Go to patreon.com/CBCThePod to subscribe and hear our whole scintillating conversation. You don't want to miss it. Mm-mm-mm. Delicious. Cold segments.
Delicious, cold, steamed
segments. What does she wear?
What does she eat?
How does she live?
What
does she eat? Everything,
what does
darling.
She, I mean, everything. Dumplings. Mm. Aspic. Pizza. Bread. Butter. I could do this all day.
She definitely made a big thing of being like, you know, when she's like out at the hot pot restaurant in L.A., when she's trying to court Lori Ochoa to... and. Jonathan Gold to come work at Gourmet. And she's like, the owners knew Jonathan and they brought out the big hot pot of like vegetables and organ meats, and all the other guests were just eating the vegetables. And Lori and I, we always had a taste for the intestines and the concealed pig's blood.
Right.
And
like, the brain. They're doing amazing things with offal at this tiny hole in the
wall. She is original, like, white girl at the Chinese restaurant who's I will get the blood soup.
Can I have the authentic version?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've told it on the podcast. We were in Brooklyn Chinatown, and Stephen ordered a cold rabbit's blood noodle soup.
Wow.
And, yeah, the waitress was like, kept on being like, are you sure? Like, you don't want this?
And
you
were
like, I want it. And it was just like a bowl of blood noodles.
It was gross and creepy. And we were like, it's a little slimy.
Yes, Ruth is, you know, of course, having omakase-san, but she thrives on...
I will say, she also does like fancy restaurants. Because the whole part of the book, she was like, oh, like Eric Repair is doing amazing things with foie gras right now. It's a cloud. And it's like her normal business lunch is foie gras and wine.
Yeah,
it's like so decadent.
A lot of the restaurants that she's talking about. I mean, it's interesting because these are the restaurants that were cool in like 2005.
Yes.
And the very like the restaurants that like 2008 just eradicated. Mm. It was like the white tablecloth, like very platey, very fancy, very like
big plate, small meal.
Yes, 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 yes.
How does she live? I mean, it's big table in the dining room where they gather.
Farm sink. Do you feel like she was the first person to have a water filler? That thing that everyone has to have in the kitchen now.
Oh, Berkey. I don't know.
Not you guys both calling it a Berkey.
That's what it's called.
Sir, it's what it's called. We're upstate girls.
Well, I got...
they call it a pot filler.
Graduation at Dimes from the sculptor.
No, I got my Berkey. It was... I found it free on the street in Hudson.
No. We're not talking about the same thing. I'm talking about that thing that's like above the stove that fills a pot with water.
Oh. Like yes.
Just a faucet that's only to fill for pasta water.
On top of the range that you can pull over.
Oh, you're talking about a pasta arm.
Yes, a pasta arm.
That, a pasta arm? That's
a pasta water.
I've heard it called a pot filler on Netflix makeover shows.
I don't know which of these sounds worse. Both are bad names.
Pasta arms.
Things.
And I discovered that from...
You guys are talking about that dime ceramic water...
Yes. That's a huge...
tank.
And it's like such a tank in your life.
You have. Okay, you got...
Listen, I don't live in New York. The water tastes bad where I am.
Low, medium bed.
I feel like it's a four-poster and it's somewhat high. And it's like Amish wood or whatever, and it's like kind of minimal, but it's like still kind of high.
And I mean, obviously, piled books for her and her husband on either side with like
glasses on either side.
Glasses everywhere. I feel like they're also still that classic Bose 5-disc changer in the kitchen.
Yes.
Do you don't think there's a chance that it's bed on the floor?
Oh, yes. I could see
that. Wait, because they're being so like Japanese eames about it?
I think it could be like that kind of like. Very
there's an
like
chair.
Boho.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's like a big bed on the floor. There are some like nightstands that are like made for a floor bed and are very nice and like designer, but then there are just tons of books stacked up.
Ultimately, no.
You don't think so?
I don't think she's getting down on the floor. I think her bones are creaking.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. She started being the editor-in-chief
at 50.
When she's 50.
So but she's also, in her 70s now.
It is also, in the how does she live, she also had an assistant... Robin, who she met, she's kind of like, at the end, she's like,
and then
I realized I hadn't done anything for myself in 10
years. When Robin, we talk about how everyone, like, the where are they nows, and she's like, Robin went on to become a reservationist at a hot restaurant.
Do you know what I realized? I sat in Robin's chair, her literal chair.
No.
Yes. Ruth's office became the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit's office, and the cubicle where Robin sat became
shaking.
Oh, my God. Wait.
You're Robin.
It was literally the same office.
So who
just,
are you in
they
the book?
They just scraped the word gourmet off of all the signs and put Bon Appetit on top of it.
Wait, in her office with the very colorful scheme that she picked out that everyone was shocked by?
Cause... Yes.
Oh, and she was like, I want a table in here, and they're like, you don't want a table in here.
Wait, so was it as wild as she describes?
There was a redecorating budget, so I don't think I saw. I didn't see the office.
So Adam had redecorated it to be more masculine.
Yes.
Dark leather chairs.
No, not dark leather, but there was like a big kind of like, what do you call that? Like one of those big wooden, like, things.
Long.
Credenza. It's got like, like a credenza with like lots of like very shallow drawers.
Okay.
That you might put like prints in. But very vintage.
I know. Yes.
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 That like that an artist who has a loft in Soho that they've had since the 60s would have in their loft to be like, this is a drawing I did.
Yes.
In 72.
Yes. But it's empty.
And
it's
I'm getting ready for my MoMA retrospective.
What does she wear? I mean, it's just like so like Japanese linen black smock blazer.
I guess like, do you think she's Eileen Fisher or is she way funkier or is she a mix of Eileen Fisher and funky?
Mix. She has like, of course, she has the just the classic Eileen Fisher pieces that she knows that work.
The
and
go-to's.
Then she has the vintage pieces that.
Is she going down, what's it called, Warren Street and window shopping and getting a lamp and like a random blanket?
I don't.
She's all over flea market. I feel like she knows Warren Street is so overpriced.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that she's going to.
Maybe in 94.
She's internalizing the lessons of her second Paris trip. Yeah. She's not overspending.
She's not buying like a $6,000 credenza. I think she's like going to a different flea market in Columbia County.
Right. I think she's like maybe getting little like tchotchkes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I found this cute. I went to a yard sale and I got this cute little like mini beer stein that I'm
Yeah. Like,
put
isn't that me. Fun? I'll get it for Nick.
Who are you in the book?
So you're Robin.
Obviously, you're Robin. Yep. You're literally Robin.
Yep.
I feel like you are.
Am I?
Are you Gina?
Oh, Gina? Wait, Gina's insane sales meetings where she's dressing up like a geisha to like.
Was that Gina?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Where she had a theme and she was like, one year
and
she drove motorcycles down Fifth Avenue to like present.
100 Harleys.
To present like sales figures to advertisers. I'm like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Like, she used every expense she could. She spared nothing. Like
I'm coming out in like full kabuki makeup to just be, to like tell our advertisers what our circulation figures are. I could see it.
But now you're so bust, so you are Ruth.
You could be Gina, but could you also be Larry?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I'm a little.
You're like, I'm excited to build this from the ground up.
I'm excited to like. Fire people, but also like get the ball moving and like crack some heads together.
Yes, the disciplinarian.
I do like to crack the whip, so to speak.
I feel like I'm Jonathan Gold, I guess. Like
you could be Jonathan Gold. You could also be Gina Marie.
Wait,
the
which...
Benson, the black-haired Bensonhurst beauty.
Yeah. Wait, she was really fab, and she was the PR rep for Condé.
No. This is the test kitchen person who was like had to make the chili the Sloppy Joe's over and over and over and over again.
She ended up doing the scallion cheddar rolls for the Sloppy Joe's.
Yes.
And it was like Gina Marie's scallion cheddar rolls.
Claxton, Gina Marie's scallion cheddar rolls.
Wait, this is you because you're just like every single night you're like, yeah, me and my wife made another rigatoni.
Yeah, I'm like, we're trying the rigatoni again though to get it perfect.
And her whole family has like a Sunday lunch and she's like, there was a thing about Gina Marie is her entire family sat down to like a 12-person lunch
94.
Every Sunday.
I've been hosting like a 12-person family lunch for the past week.
For 7 days. Okay, done, Gina Marie.
I give this book 5 out of 5 cloves of garlic.
I give this book 5 1971 bottles of Dom Perignon out of 5.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
And I highly recommend...
any of her... this book, Girl
I think
stuff.
You... read this and read Tina Brown's Vanity Fair Diaries, like, one after the other, because it's just a fascinating documentation of a world that no longer exists.
I'm going to give it 4 couture dresses with Severine stitched into the lapel out of 5.
Right.
I feel like she gave a lot of the anecdotes of the boring parts of being a gourmet editor and not as many of the really exciting. It was like a lot of like ad meetings.
Yeah.
And it was like, and the numbers were still going down and less like, and I like the trips. The trips are fun.
The trips are fun. But, you know, as she says, I mean, she, you know, she foretells this in the beginning. She's like, it became all about ad meetings. And that was her undoing.
Yes.
Because she also became too focused on that
brand
side of
Ruth.
It. Yeah.
She became Brand Ruth.
And when she was just like, I'm going to 1,000 like women on the world conferences and I'm winning so many random ass awards for like.
But also, I mean, I guess this is over, but like.
This is over. I mean,
this is fucking over. We have to get in the VIP lounge.
All right. We're going to keep talking in the VIP lounge. Okay. Emil, you can't leave.
You can't leave.
We're locking the doors. For the rest of you.
Literally best. Go have a meal.
Go have lunch in Manhattan in the middle of the
day. Lunch in Manhattan in the middle of the day. And then also, maybe bring this book for amazing dining alone armor. Actually, don't bring this book to lunch. That's a little too band teacher.
Yeah, that's a little. Yeah.
Bring Tina Brown to lunch. This at home.
Although I will say, remember when I brought Setting the Table to the Denny Meyer restaurant and I also got free wine, I think, because of that?
Oh, yeah, I guess basically just go to a Denny Meyer restaurant because you get free wine. And we still have yet to go to his daughter's gelateria. Anyway, literally best.
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 Beast.
Celebrity Book Club is presented by Prologue Projects. The show is produced by Benjamin Frisch, with editorial support from Leon Nafok, Andrew Parsons, Arlene Arevalo, and Madeline Kaplan. Our production manager is Persia Verlin. Original theme song by Stephen Phillips Horst. Artwork by Teddy Blanks at Chips NY. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CBC The Pod. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review and don't forget to tell your friends. Well, about us. And don't forget to go to patreon.com for access to the VIP lounge, our exclusive bonus podcast.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Because there's nothing like a weekend pause with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.